the more people moved their bodies, the more they shared about their lives. And like, I loved that part. It was not so much the workout, but the connecting with my clients that I loved. So that drove me to kind of lean further into the mind-body connection.
Welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. My guest today is Lily Rachels. She's a mental health and mindset coach, and today she's going to talk about that and much more. And Lily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I usually like to begin with just tell us a little bit more about yourself and how did you end up in this space?
Yeah, so I'm Lily. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I work as, you said, a mental health and mindset coach. And excuse me, I came to this space through a couple of different things. I started off as an exercise science major in my undergrad and became a personal trainer. And I noticed when I was working with people that the more people moved their bodies, the more they shared about their lives. And like, I loved that part. It was not so much the workout, but the connecting with my clients that I loved. So that drove me to kind of lean further into the mind-body connection. I pursued my instructor license in yoga and then trauma-sensitive yoga. And I really wanted to help people on a deeper level. So that's when I went back to school. I got my master's in social work and started practicing therapy. But it wasn't long after working as a therapist that I realized there was this missing piece between traditional talk therapy and like actually creating real sustainable change. And that's what led me to coaching and a more holistic approach to therapy, counseling, personal growth.
And what is that missing piece? Coaching?
So I believe it's a couple of things. One, I think talk therapy really focuses just on the cognitive and the mental aspect, and it forgets that like we have this whole body and we leave out the somatic piece in our nervous system and how trauma is actually stored in our body.
Yeah, the book coming up right now is The Body Keeps Score.
That's a great book.
And yeah, it's such an important distinction, right? Because you just focus on the mind, but it's all connected. And the mind and the body, like, I didn't even know what the mind-body connection was. And when I found out, it was just mind-blowing. Like, wow, I'm just making up this story kind of in my mind. And it's doing this to my body. And once I changed that story, everything changed. And a big part of that for me was exercise. So I had mental health challenges. Exercise helped me shift. So you that's what you do, and that's where you said you were learning it as you were doing exercising. But how does that play into the mental health, improving it?
Yeah, so exercise specifically can improve mental health in a couple of different ways. I mean, one, we just look at like the release of endorphins. You get your body into a healthier state. You're going to feel better. But it's also because we store trauma in our physical body. And so physically moving can help move that trauma. I will say, like, not just in the exercise realm, but one of the most like transformative things I've ever done in my own life for my own growth was starting breath work and doing deep active breath work to really start to move those stuck emotions and that stuck trauma in your body.
Yeah, I love it. So we hear this emotions is energy in motion, and then when you're blocked, it's because it's not moving, it's stuck. I think in some yogic sciences, they call them chakras, right? And they're just wheels. And so if you can get that energy to move around, then it's almost like you free yourself up to let the trauma come up. And then the secret when the trauma comes up is to release it and not shove it back down.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, you look at traditional talk therapy, and I just did a workshop on this where I said at the end, I was like, if you have had the same therapist for a long time, you have an expensive friend, because all you're doing is just, if you're just chatting, and I'm like, if you're not setting goals and you're not measuring your success and you're not, you know, doing more holistic things along with just talking about your problems, it's likely not going to get you very far. And that's why I think traditional talk therapy particularly when it comes to men, I don't think it's that helpful to just talk about it. We need more than that.
Yeah, I love it. I think the talk there, they both have their place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just the thing, like you said, right? You can go with the talk therapy and just know up front that you might be spending 18 months or something talking before that you get through, right? And where coaching, it's definitely not the same. The licensing, the schooling is not the same at all. But coaching is more here just creating it. Okay, this is in our body. These are the things. Breath work was one of them. Meditation, journaling, all the things, right, that we learned through CBT and other modalities. And what do you want to create? And let's start creating it now. I think the Arthur Ashe quote always comes up is like, start where you are, use what you have, and just do what you can. And that's it. There's nothing else you can do.
No, and absolutely. And yes, no, there's always a place for it. I mean, I do sessions with people that is more talk therapy oriented, but with just kind of more added on where we're not just like sitting here together ruminating on the problem. We're actually thinking like, how are we going to get through this? Like, what does the goal look like? Like, where are we going with this? So I'm very goal oriented and action oriented when it comes to, you know, when you want to change your life.
Are we talking SMART goals or is there other systems probably?
I mean, SMART goals, I think, is that like gold standard for when you're setting a goal, right? Because you don't want to create this like crazy insane thing that's hard for you to get. So I always talk to people about, you know, small steps. Like, I'm big on building habits into your daily life that are sustainable. So I'm not going to ask a client to go, you know, meditation is something I use a lot. But I don't ask them to start, you know, an hour meditation practice every day. I'm like, let's sit still for 5 minutes and focus on your breath. Just small, sustainable steps that you can build over time. And then as those become natural habits, we'll start to increase. Maybe you sit for 10 minutes today. So it just kind of increases over time. I think that sets people up for success more than, if your goals are not, I don't like to say goals are too big, but you've got to break them down into bite-sized pieces.
Yeah. I use a line that says, go low, go slow. And
I love that.
Literally, like, let's start with 1 minute. Meditating, walking, journaling, whatever. 1 minute. And then add 1 minute tomorrow. And after a month, you're at 30. And I've had other people who, like, just right away, they'll jump into 10 minutes. And then after a week, they're done. And it's like, but I didn't ask you to do 10, just one at a time, because part of the neuroplastic effect, and it's becoming a habit, right?
It becomes a part of you. I do the same when sometimes if I don't want to go to the gym, I'll tell myself, like, I'm just going to go to the gym and do squats. And every time I get to the gym, if I finish the squats, I stay and do more. But sometimes it's even just this, I only have to do this. And if I complete this, it's a success. But that's going to get me in the door at the gym versus if I'm like, oh, I have to go and stay for an hour and a half and do this full routine. Sometimes it feels like too much and I might skip it. So I love that. Yeah, giving them the smaller steps.
Yeah. In Atomic Habits by James Clear, he talks about even just don't even go in the gym. Just put your stuff on and drive past the gym, right? But yeah, it's a habit. I'm going to get it backwards maybe, but it's time as location and, oh man, do you know that one?
Oh, help me out a little bit. I'll try to think of it. You said time as location?
Oh, time as energy and location as memory. And it might be the opposite, but it kind of works both ways. But it's just like when you're making those habits, if you do it at the same time in the same place every day, eventually your body just kind of goes towards it.
Yeah, because we all have a ton of habits we do every day that we like to drop, right? Like those bad habits, we start to do a little bit, they start to increase. Maybe it's scrolling on your phone for too long, watching Netflix for longer than you want to. So it's like, just like we build those by kind of slowly increasing over time, build the good ones that way too.
Yeah. And you bring something very unique. So you're coaching with men, mindset, mental health, and I think there's like a stigma and it's still there. I'm not sure why it's still there. Like maybe 10 years ago, but after COVID, it shouldn't be there anymore, but I think it's still there. And so you're helping to break that stigma, but what does that look like? And do you see the stigma?
I definitely see the stigma. I think there's a lot of like just societal conditioning and, you know, men are treated different when it comes to mental health. I think that men, they suffer in, like you guys, you suffer in silence a lot. And it's almost expected that you bear the burden and you keep pushing forward. You know, it's women are naturally more, I would say, community oriented in that we share things with each other all the time. Whereas men, they're more likely to share if they're going to solve something. And so we're really good at just building community and talking to our friends and off-gassing here and there when we need to, something comes up. Whereas at least the men I work with, I've seen, tend to kind of keep it all inside. They internalize it and they keep doing their job. They internalize it and they keep showing up for the family. And that's something I would say men's mental health is very important to me. And it's funny because as a woman, being a men's coach, there was a part of me that was like, can I do this? Is this okay? Am I allowed to do this? And I realized I have to do this because, like, for me, my why is many of the men that are very close to me in my life have, you know, actively considered taking their life at some point. And it's like, I want to help with that, right? Like, I want to give voice to men's struggles and also, you know, give them that avenue that you don't have to carry this alone. You can still be strong and share what's going on inside. I think a lot of times we confuse this with like this weakness and vulnerability. And I have a couple of clients that they're like, I hate the word vulnerability. It sounds disgusting. It sounds weak. And I'm like, let's just call it honesty. Let's just call it sharing context of your life and make it honesty. So that sometimes helps.
Yeah, I love it. It's like I was telling you about facilitating those mental health groups. It comes up all the time. And like, to say it out loud, like, I'm like, you don't have to turn your camera off. You don't have to choke back and stop those emotions. Let it happen. If you need to turn your camera off, go do your thing, but don't trap it back down. And but I was told my whole life it was weak. And I'm like, okay, well, whoever told you that didn't understand the science, because now we know that the science is telling us that it's just going to come out as the anger or some other way, right? You're going to hurt yourself or someone else instead of just let it out, move through it.
Or a sickness in your body later on, or physical pain in your body. And that, yeah, no, I think that's huge. And like I said, I think it's that realizing that you can still be a strong masculine man and share the context of what's going on for you. You know, it's like, you don't have to just button up and not say anything. Or I had one client that said, he's like, I have to be like the Terminator. I told myself that when I was little, I had to just, you know, keep it all in. And it's, you know, we get these ideas and beliefs when we're young and we carry them into adulthood, and it's just really peeling away that conditioning.
Yeah, that's what it is. And then even more for the men who have kids, then what message are you sending your kid? Like, because it will come back. Like you said, it could manifest as some kind of disease, whatever, but it's so true. This is a timely interview because yesterday, a football player from the Philadelphia Eagles retired after 13 years. And you might know his brother. She was at the Usher concert. He was at the Usher concert. And Taylor Swift's boyfriend, what's his name? Travis Kelce. His brother played for Philly. Jason Kelce. He played 13 years, but he gave about a 12-minute interview yesterday. I would encourage anyone to go check it out. And it was a speech. It was beautiful. But he was crying and he like broke down. And you're talking about this huge dude who, like, I'm sure you've seen him through the playoffs on the TV with no shirt on beside Taylor Swift, right? And this is this big grown man. And you know what I mean? To see that was kind of nice. And then another one I always think of too, that like this. So the idea of that is like, I'm going to show this now next week to that group and say, look, it's okay, right? And another one was a rapper, Nipsey Hussle. And he was, I don't know, is it Blood or Crypt, whatever, but he got gunned down 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember watching the news and they were driving his hearse through like every neighborhood in LA for like 4 hours. And it was just packed. There was like 2 or 3 deep on every single block. Bloods and Crips standing beside each other, big, huge, 300-pound tough guys crying. And I was like, okay, so maybe there is a shift happening. I hope it is.
Yeah, I hope so too. And it's interesting you say that because I remember growing up, my father, who was, I still, you know, look up to as the strongest, greatest man in my life. He would cry when he was like overwhelmed with emotion or it was something to do with us. Like I witnessed that. And so for me, it was always that, you know, paradigm I got growing up is that you can be strong and you can show emotion. And it's interesting because most of the clients I work with, you know, they grew up in a very opposite context where it was like you were shut down if you tried to show emotion. So it's really that reparenting and retraining ourselves that just because we were taught one thing doesn't mean it has to stay true in our life.
Yeah, I love it. And then you just made me realize maybe I'm the way I am because I saw that too. My dad was like a man's man, but he would also cry and happy cry and sad cry, but he wasn't holding it back. So thanks for the reminder. So when you do coaching or when you do your work, are you doing it in groups or one-on-one, or what does that look like?
So I've done both. Right now I'm really focused on my one-on-one work because, to be honest, like that's what I really enjoy. I like going really deep with an individual for, you know, a good period of time. In the future I'll probably do more groups, but I haven't done, it's probably been been over a year since I did my last like group kind of experience.
Yeah, amazing. I think both are powerful, right? Especially for
Absolutely.
what you're doing, it might be even more powerful, the one-on-one, because that stigma is still there and it's hard.
Yeah, I know I have big hopes and dreams for some different kind of groups I'd like to see happen one day. But yeah, right now, just where I am in life, I'm really enjoying working with people on in the one-to-one aspect. So,
I love it. I look at some of your content and the word grief pops up a lot. And so, as I'm talking about that football player yesterday, he's grieving not over death, he's grieving over a part of his life that's closing. And so, there's a part where when we hear the word grief, we just think about loss. Somebody lost a life or a person or an animal, but there's much more to it. Is that correct?
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we, as you said, like we can grieve the loss of a career. And even if it's not a change that's, you know, even if it's like retirement, you know, a lot of people are like, yay, you're retired. That's awesome. There's still a process we can go through with, you know, the loss of that. And, you know, I think grief is something that is still pretty misunderstood, like at least in the Western world, how we deal with it. I think we try to compartmentalize it and we try to compact it into like a day or, you know, a weekend during a funeral, or maybe you got divorced and it's like, okay, you're through with all the legal stuff. You're in your new home. You should be over it. So I think it's something that gets still pretty misunderstood. But yeah, we grieve a number of different things.
Amazing. And then as far as men, it's not just men. You'll coach with anybody.
Yeah, so I focus more on men. I don't turn people away if we're a good fit to work together. But I tend to work mostly with men. I do have a few clients now, like in the grief support kind of realm that are women. I enjoy the work again more with men because, you know, we talked about it a second ago, that societal conditioning. Sometimes, you know, men have a more difficult time tapping in to those emotions and allowing themselves to truly experience what's coming up for them, whether it's sadness or it's anger. They can, at least my clients, can really suppress and try to, you know, push it away, push it down, keep moving forward. And so I enjoy that work because I really enjoy helping them. Like, let's let these emotions come up. Let's actually feel them, experience them in your body, so that you can move forward and you're not still carrying around with you all this heavy stuff. I think of it as if you were going to hike up a hill, grief is like in picking up all these rocks. And, you know, if you're carrying anger and frustration and sadness, it gets really heavy to get to where you want to go. So in grief support, it's like, let's sit down, let's put the rocks on the ground, and let's take a little time to look at them and just be with them. And maybe you're ready to leave a couple and take a few steps forward and then sit down again. And maybe we leave a few more and take a few steps forward. So the goal is that we start walking up the mountain without carrying, you know, a bag full of rocks of our, you know, pain and the emotions that we've been suppressing.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good imagery that comes up with that. And it's true, right? A lot of it, like you said, it's just people gave it to us. It's not all ours. We just carry it with us, right? It's just like, so you've been carrying around this bag for 20 years, like let go of the bag. It's okay.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like, you know, when people even go into relationships and stuff, a lot of times we show up in a new relationship with a bag full of junk from, you know, this breakup that was really painful, or this person I dated that did this, you know, and all this different baggage. And then it comes in and it affects the current relationship. So it's taking the time to actually grieve and let yourself experience the pain and the loss that comes with that.
Yeah, that's great. I kind of wonder what are some books that help you along your way or with this area or anything?
Yeah. I saw that when you sent me the email. I know I jotted down a few books. Those did not pertain specifically to grief. But I will say one book I always like to suggest whenever I have a chance, it's more in the relationship realm, is Fierce Intimacy by Terry Real. Have you ever read that one? Oh, it's the book I suggest to everybody. Anytime a friend comes to me or a client, they say anything about like struggling in a relationship, I'm like, please read Fierce Intimacy. It gives so many insights and perspective and tools. It's great. And that helped me a lot in my own life and in my own relationship. So that's probably a big number one. Another book that I think is great for anyone and everyone is The Four Agreements.
Yeah.
Have you read that one?
Yeah, let's just remind them what they are. So don't take things personal. Do the
best. Be impeccable with your word. Don't take things personally. And always do your best.
Yeah. I love that book. It's so good. It's so true, right? Because the second you start having that frame of mind, like, and then you don't take things personally and you just...
Oh, and don't make assumptions. We forgot to list one.
Right. Yeah. Don't make assumptions.
Maybe so, one of the most important, don't make assumptions.
One other book you had there, and I heard you talk about it earlier, Knowing Your Why, but Simon Sinek.
I love everything Simon Sinek does. His book Leaders Eat Last.
Amazing.
It's such a good book. And I think it's a good book in any, like whether you're, it's for a relationship, it's for business, which obviously he talks more in like the career business aspect in that book. But, you know, I think we're all leaders in our own lives in different ways, whether you're leading your family, you know, you're leading a crew at work, whatever it is, that is a phenomenal book to read. And I love how he also nerds out with like kind of the brain chemicals and the neurology aspect of it. So.
Yeah, anyone who wants leadership, just anything that guy touches, any speeches, anything, he's so good. That book you just said, Leaders Eat Last, it always reminds me of Che Guevara. He would always eat last. And it's like, how do you get this army going? Like, he seems to be the most loved. If you've ever been to Cuba, there's just everywhere. It's just paintings and murals of this guy. Like, and it's like, that's part of the reason, right? Because he's the leader, but like, letting everyone else eat last. Now those people are willing to go die for you. And it's a metaphor for business and life, but it's the same thing, right? If you make sure if your employees know that you're willing to do the dirty work or go clean the toilet or whatever it is, they're going to go that extra mile for you.
Yes, absolutely. And like I said, I think you can bring that back to just your relationships. You know, when we show up in a relationship asking what someone else is going to do for us or what someone else brings to the table, it's like you're already setting that up for failure because you're just looking outside of you instead of asking, like, how can I show up like as my best self in this relationship today? How can I serve my partner today? You know, and that's really how you lead a healthy relationship is, you know, that heart of service and asking, you know, what do I bring to the table instead of, you know, listing off what you believe they should be.
Yeah, I do love that. I look at that as the ego, right? The other way is, what am I getting? And what about mine, as opposed to like you, they, we, how can I serve? Yeah, because then the ego would just get stuck and then you become resentful and all this other garbage, all from stemming from me, right? Whereas if once, so what we focus on expand, that's a tagline of the podcast, right?
Yeah.
And so I had a tumor in my spine. It might still be there. I have no idea, but it caused me this chronic pain. I couldn't laugh, cough, sneeze, breathe for like a decade. And it was because I was just kept focusing on me. I would be like, why me? I would literally say, why me all the time? And once I started focusing on other people, there's no room for me to think about my own pain. My pain diminished because now I'm focusing on others. And it's like that in so many areas.
Yeah, I think it was at Tony Robbins, where your attention goes, energy flows. And I have another friend, he says it, what you appreciate.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's so true. And that, you know, we've already kind of opened the door talking about relationships a little bit. That's something I've used in my own life and I have clients do. It's, I'm really big on, you know, having a gratitude practice, not writing a list of things you should be grateful for. I don't think that's helpful, but actually writing down like something you noticed that day that brought you some kind of appreciation or joy. It could be small, could be something you witnessed, because it's like, as we start to focus and train our brain to like notice these things, we notice more of these things in our lives. And I'll have people do that when they're having a hard time with their partner. I'll be like, okay, every time you have a thought about them that's like, this person sucks or this, you know, I want you to immediately like lean into gratitude and be like, what is something, just even if it's the smallest thing, that you can tell yourself that you appreciate about that person? And again, it's over time. It's like going to the gym and doing reps, right? It's like we're just building that muscle of appreciation.
Yeah, I'll give you an example happened to me the other day. I like to run and I always like to do it as early in the day as I can. And just, I was getting ready to go. Something happened, couldn't go. And so I had to wait till later on, right? And so for the couple hours before I went for that later on, I'm like, man, this sucks. What can I do it? Later on, I went for a run on the same route that I always go on. But there was this, there's like these horses, field with horses in there, right? But I never see the horses when I go early. And later on when I was had to go, I saw like 40 horses and it was just like awe, like just like, whoa, right? And where it's like right away when I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's why I'm running at this time. Like, I'm getting out of myself.
I love that. I love that. And that's a good reminder for me, because I can be someone who, when I get like pushed out of my routine because of a different obligation, I'm like, everything just feels a little thrown off. But it's that reminder. It's like, sometimes if we can still just open ourselves up to the possibility that this could be great and I'm going to find something in this experience or this change of schedule that's going to be great. And maybe you'll feed 40, 50 horses.
Yeah, it's beautiful, right? And those moments of awe too, just like being appreciative in your day for like any little thing, man. Last night I was doing this thing called stick and puck with my son, where we just playing, you just bring a stick and puck, everyone goes on the ice and I'm playing with him, but like, I'm just like, wow, this is special because of the age, because of the time, because we're at the end of the season. And it's just like next year, you know what I mean? Eventually he's not going to want to do that. And it's just like, so I took a moment in the moment to appreciate what's going on. And did you freeze on me?
Or no, I don't think so. Did I?
Oh, okay. You're there.
No, no,
you're
just really like stuck. He's like holding himself.
All right. As we begin to wind down, if this episode resonates with you, please like, subscribe, share, but no hard sell, and reach out to Lily, especially the man out there listening to this. It's a different container. It's a much safer environment. It's secure. And reach out to Lily. If you check out, we'll put all her links, but if you check it out, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Obviously, you can tell from this conversation that she's very compassionate, empathetic, passionate about this subject. So she's probably the person you want to talk to. And I always ask everyone this question. This is the Phase 4 podcast, and Phase 4 in the 6-phase meditation by Vishen Lakhiani is all about creating your future 3 years from today. So where is Lily 3 years from today?
Where is Lily 3 years from today? She's living more on the road. That's something my partner and I are both working towards, doing the RV life thing. And she's published a book and she's still doing one-on-one work with men. And yeah, that's where I want to be 3 years from today.
I want to be there too. That sounds great.
I know, we're all about that. We're always looking at how can we make our life more and more freedom, more and more mobility, more and more travel.
Yeah. What I love for the people just listening on audio, when I asked that question, Lily closed her eyes. She took a second, and that's what it's all about for me, is the dreaming into the future. And something happens when you have that dream and you allow yourself, especially if you close your eyes, and if you can shut down more than one sense, that's even better. But something happens where you feel that dream and it's new, right? It might not be new, maybe you've even had that dream, but you're creating, and it's just, there's nothing, it's positive, and I just love it. So to have you close your eyes and think about it, that's what I love about this.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah, I mean, it's the visualization. That's something I try to do every morning when I wake up is, you know, first a few seconds of just gratitude, you know, and then just close my eyes. And it's like visualize, like you said, that 3 year for me, sometimes it's like a particular goal, like receiving. I think that's so important and huge.
Yeah, there's something too. If you keep revisiting the same vision over and over again, every time you come back, you go into it, you get a little more detail that wasn't there. And then I think Joe Dispenza says, like, if you don't ever think about your future or what you want, you might walk right past it and you won't notice it, right? And the life you want is waiting there and you walk right past it because you never thought about it. Whereas if you visualize and you keep revisiting the same one, when you get to it, it's going to be familiar and you'll be like, okay, here we go. And I've been there, I've done it a couple times. So, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I always say to people when we kind of plan out, like, you know, what is it you desire? What do you want? Because I'm like, if you don't know where you want to go, then, like, you know, anywhere will do. And you'll never know. Like you said, you'll never know if you get there and you might just completely miss out on something that you did actually want because you were just unaware and not looking for it.
Yeah. Usually I'm better read where I know my quotes, but there's another one is like that if you don't decide, I don't, it might be from The Secret or something, but it's almost like if you don't tell the universe what you want, then you just have to take whatever's left after everyone else who did is done.
I don't know if which one, I think it sounds like The Secret, but I'm like, regardless, I'm like, I love the way you said that. It's like, yeah, you're going to get the leftovers if you don't say what you want.
And so before I ask my final question, I kind of always let the guests take it wherever they want. So if you have something to sell, sell it. If you want to give a message of hope, inspiration, something that we don't know, any events coming up, anything you want, take it wherever you want.
Yeah, no, I would just love to invite anyone listening to head over to growthovereasy.com and check out what I do. I do have a free workshop coming up. I don't know when this podcast will come out. The workshop's on March 27th, but it will be posted to the website. So even if it's after March 27th, it's there. And it's called Growth Over Silence. And it's all about stopping the silent suffering. So men, if you're listening, please, growthoveracy.com, come join for that.
Awesome. So my final question is always, where can people reach you? But you kind of touched it there.
Check.
Okay, so then let's ask a different question. You said you're going to write a book. So do you know what it's about? And do you have a working title?
Okay, so I have about 5 different ideas. I would like, one book I really want to write is on supporting people who are grieving when you're the support system. So how to take care of yourself when your wife, your husband, your kids, someone is going through something really difficult. Because sometimes I think we forget that being a supporter through someone else's difficult life transition can also be really taxing. So I want to write a book about that. And then another book just about, you know, I always say, check on your happy friends. We're not okay. You know, about how we can sometimes, people that use humor and sarcasm to, you know, put up walls and hide what's really going on, like just speaking to them and how to let those walls down and allow yourself to truly be supported by others. So there you go.
So again, growthovereasy.com. Anywhere else?
That's at Lily Rachel's on social platforms. So right. Yep, all over them.
All right. So that's Lily with 2 L's. And Lily, I'm so grateful for your time today. Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you. It was great talking to you.